thank you very much for coming. My name is Eliyahu Prero. I live in Muncie, New York, and I am a learning specialist at Yeshiva Sor Reuven. Primarily, my job entails working with boys who do not achieve the same level of success in the classroom as other boys. And I employ very, very specific methods to bring them on track and to bring them not only back into the classroom, but bring them to the level where they super succeed in the classroom. And it is with great pleasure that I share with you my methodology and my thoughts on teaching. The first part of it is we have in our little sheet before us, we have a little circle. And that circle is a picture, it's a little picture there, but we have number one. It says, success leads to confidence, confidence leads to success. And we have a little picture. And actually, I made this picture myself on Microsoft Paint. Pretty good, right? What?
Very good.
Very good. Okay, thank you. I'm not supposed to say that, but I did. It's basically, the formula goes following, is that if we can give a child success, that'll bring them confidence to go farther in learning. And if we could give a child confidence in what he learned, then he's going to feel success. And there are really two things that go hand in hand. The phrase goes success brings success, but breeds success. My idea is success builds confidence, and confidence builds success. And when we speak about learning with your child, it could be a very, very stress-filled, anxiety-filled time. And my idea is not that it should be anxiety-filled, but it should be a positive time together. It should be a time when the father and the child find a thrill to learn together, and they feel that it's a very, very positive experience. So much so that basically, I'm going to give the spoiler here, is that the father sets up the child for success. Is that he's not going to challenge the child more than the child needs to be challenged. Set up the child for success. Here is a fastball down the middle, and you are going to hit it out of the park. And being that so, I would like to share with you an observation that I saw recently in shul, and I'm going to leave names out of it. There was recently a man learning with his child and said, Yankel, let's read the Gemara. So Yankel was sitting there in his Gemara, and the father was sitting there with his art scroll, and he said, Yankel, let's go. And I said, no, I don't want to read the Gemara. So he says, I understand. You went to class, you got it with your Rebbe. Rabbi Kahan came to our house, and he learned. And now, I'm going with you at night, and I'm very tired, and I want you to read the Gemara. So read the Gemara. And the kid said, Dad, I don't want to read the Gemara. So this went on for about 5 or 10 minutes. Read it, I don't want to. Until I actually left the room. I wasn't embarrassed or anything like that. But I left the room, I came back, and the father said, listen, son, we've been here for 10 minutes and we haven't learned anything. So the son said, well, I don't really care. And it went on for a while until they started learning, and the father learned with the son, and they ended up getting things on. And I questioned the whole scenario, which is, why is it that the son did not want to read the Gemara for the father? What was it that he felt that was so daunting that he couldn't read? What was it? Where is the tension? In which case, I'm going to skip to step number two, which is climbing the mountain of Torah with the four Haitians. Now, these aren't Haitians from the island of Haiti, but rather these are the that's not political. Oh, they're Haitians. They're Haitians. So I'm going to go over the four. I'm going to explain the picture, and then we're going to go on. So the first one is pronunciation. It's not really Haitian. It's Asian, but it's good enough. The second one is translation. The third is explanation. And the fourth step is evaluation. The first three steps are primarily for the child, and the fourth step is for the educator/parent. When the parent is with the child, should perform an evaluation of the child. I'll explain step by step. So if we look at the picture here, we have a mountain, and we have an arrow going top of the mountain with clouds. The first picture shows an arrow going directly to the top of the mountain. And this says, here you go, here's the Chumash, now read the Chumash and tell me what it says. And fill out your homework, Mi'ar Mar Lami, and tell me exactly the background for all the stories. And that seems, that could be very daunting for a child or for anybody. And in the second picture, we have something which is seems to be a little bit easier, at least to me, and we have the four Asians on the side of a mountain, which is that we're going to go over the mountain very, very slowly. We're going to climb it up. The first step is going to be pronunciation. The second step is going to be translation. The third step is going to be explanation. And the fourth step is going to be evaluation, and that's going to be on the top of the mountain. And clearly the goal of the Torah learning should be to get to the top of the mountain, to climb the mountain of Torah, and to be on top. And of course, every parent wants their child to be on top. Every child wants their child to get 100 on the test. How is it that we help a child get 100 on the test? How is it that we help the child get to the spot where they understand the teacher, where they're involved in the classroom, and they're really on top of the material? Before I begin pronunciation, this type of learning with a child could be in two ways. One, sometimes the child learns with a parent after he went to school. For example, they learn Parshas Shlach, and they learn the pasuk Shlach Lecha Anashim V'Asuras Eretz Kanan. And then the child comes home, and they have a certain amount of questions, and then the father or mother sits with the child in order to answer the question. That is an excellent way of learning. That's a primary way of learning, kind of like a review. There's another way of learning, which is called pre-learning, which is that sometimes we have a child who's falling back a little bit in the classroom, who's not performing 100% peak, who's not really going to understand what the teacher says. We'll perform what's called pre-learning, which is that next week we're going to get to this Gemara. Next week we're going to get to this pasuk. Let's come here right now and let's pre-learn. Let's understand what the pasuk is talking about without the pressure of the classroom, without the pressure of succeeding, certainly without the pressure of showing off to your father how much you learned in the classroom. Take away that outer level. That is a way, the pre-learning, in my mind, is an excellent, excellent way to introduce the child to being on top of the class. And I have so many stories I could tell you of boys that I learned with who were on the bottom of the class. And I spent with them a month to learn a Mishnah. A month. 1 month to learn one Mishnah. And obviously, when I was learning with a child, I was keeping up in homework, and I didn't. But I wasn't. That wasn't my focus. Review wasn't my focus. My focus was pre-learning this one Mishnah. And lo and behold, the day came in Shir, and the Rebbe read the Mishnah. And then the Rebbe asked, "Is there a boy in the class who can read the Mishnah?" All of a sudden, Yoni's hand went up, and the Rebbe said, "Yoni, go ahead, read the Mishnah." He said, "No problem." He read this Mishnah like this. And the Rebbe said, "Whoa, Yoni, where were you the whole year? That's amazing." That was the mission that I taught him. And the boy got a nachas now at home, and everything was wonderful. Well, I spent a month teaching him this Mishnah. Hopefully, he'd understand this Mishnah. But you know what happened? Is that the next day, the boy came into class, and he also read the Gemara for the Rebbe. Not just the Gemara that I taught him, but he had so much confidence with what I taught him that he was able to use those skills the next day. He had confidence. One day he was on top of the class, and he was able to use it for the next day. So with that in mind, in terms of the setting of the learning, we're going to go through the four. Number one is pronunciation. We spoke a little bit before about Kriya and how important it is, and we'll speak a little bit about now, is that it is of utmost importance for a child who's reading Chumash, for a child who's reading Gemara, to know the exact pronunciation of the words. Why is that important? Number one, for confidence. That's going to be our theme, confidence leads to success. Is that if a child reads the pasuk and he knows how to read it and he spends time, that is already half the battle. Because many times children aren't going to want to read if they're going to make mistakes. And they said, "Wow, I made a mistake reading. I don't feel good reading. Why should I read if I don't feel good about what I'm doing?" That's negative. But if we look for the positive and we say, okay, I understand we have a whole bunch of homework going on today, and we have a midterm, and we have a test, and we have progress reports coming home, all I'm interested is in one thing. Can we read this word? Can we read this pasuk? And if we can't read the pasuk and we can't read the word, can we read this letter with this nekuda? Let's take down pronunciation to the smallest letter and build from there. And we will find that if children have confidence in reading, in pronunciation, then they are already there. They have already climbed a little bit of the mountain. The idea, yes, I can learn. I am empowered to learn. I am empowered to learn like the great boys in the class. How is it that we give pronunciation? How is it that we can implement this skill of pronunciation? So one way, I like to say all the time, is modeling. And sometimes we see a bunch of ducks walking. I live in Muncie, and we see the geese all the time and the ducks, especially in the spring. So we have the mama duck, and then we have the baby ducks. They're all walking in a row. Now, they're all walking in a row. It's called imprint modeling. Is that the mother is walking in a certain way, and the children are walking after the mother. And essentially, what I say is, let's say I'm teaching the pasuk of Shalach Lecha Anashim. If a child is having difficulty pronouncing the word Shalach, I would say, okay, repeat after me. This first word is Shalach. Can you read this? And, well, they've been told exactly what the word is. Sure, it's Shalach. Great. Okay. Let's go on to the next word. Lecha. Can you read that after me? Sure. Lecha. Okay, great. Let's go on to the next word. Anashim. Okay. Anashim. Essentially leading hand in hand the child, as opposed to sitting down. Okay, read the Gemara. Let's go. Well, I don't want to read. What do you mean you don't want to read? You learned it in class. You had a right cabin come over. Tremendous difference in attitude, a tremendous difference in hold, a tremendous difference in method. And this methodology, not only is it more efficient, but is actually more enjoyable and will lead to greater results with the child. Understanding that there are many times in Gemara where the letters are not written, the nekudos are not written in the Gemara, and it is my opinion that a child should then write the nekudos in the Gemara or use a nekudos Gemara that my good friend Toby Rapper sells in Muncie. And those will help a child at least initially form the basis of pronunciation. Okay, are there any questions about pronunciation?
When you give an example of saying it word by word.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great, but it's not seeing if he knows how to read. He's
correct.
Repeating it after you.
Correct. Correct. Teaching reading in and of itself is a much different skill. This is assuming that a child doesn't necessarily have the confidence in reading. He can put these things together, and you want to help him. You want to help him along. Essentially, you're correct. Is that I should really, if I would, on a purist level. Meaning, I consider myself a purist. What do I mean by a purist? If I were to play baseball, I would, which I don't do frequently, I haven't done for the past 10 or 15 years or so, but if I would, I'd be wearing a Chicago Cubs jersey from the 1920s, using a bat from South Carolina, and pitching with a ball that, I don't know who that famous pitcher was, Cy Young pitched with, right? I would be using the most essential back-to-basics approach. In reality, I may not be able to get that equipment, and I may not be able to go through with my dreams. What I'm pointing out to here is that the idea of going hand in hand means that sometimes I'm going to work on the bare bones. Sometimes I'm spending those 5-10 minutes working on individual kriya, working on that individual skill, and working on him so that the child is where he needs to be in that skill. That's very important. However, still understanding that at the grade level where he needs to start developing more cognitive skills of understanding the material. So you're correct. I am cheating. Because if I was a purist, I would say, I'm working on Kriya, until we know Kriya. And your class is going to be by Parshas Lech Lecha. Well, that's not where you are. And I'm, Emir Tashem, I'll speak to that a little bit in Vinishinantem Lumanecha, that you are your child's best teacher, which is the individual attention that you can give. I'm understanding, I'm already coming with understanding of a, of the world mechanic, so to speak. That there's a...
So this is not to work on their hand, but to help them be able to be participating in the class where their class is at.
Where their class is at. And
with the confidence that they are at the same level.
Correct. Correct. And it's not a fake confidence. Understanding that pronunciation and the intricacy of the Kriya skills is important to work on its own. That could be at a different time, and that could also be part of pronunciation, meaning we have a word shalach. Let's take a few minutes. I know your homework is on Mi Amar Lami, who said to who shalach lecha anashim. Let's take a few minutes and analyze this word shalach. Take it from the context of the pasuk that we're doing in Chumash and bring that to our lesson. Now, a Kriya lesson can take 10, 15 minutes, a little bit more than 10, 15 minutes, sometimes 30, a little more than that. It's very, very tough to do more. So it could well be that we're going to take a Kriya lesson, but we also have to understand the overall material. Okay. Thank you for your question. The next stage is translation, and that's climbing the second tier of the mountain. Translation of exact words is very difficult. In fact, I, at one point in time, had the idea to write my own version of the Art Scroll of Gemara, because the goal of the Art Scroll is to translate and elucidate the Gemara. It's more of an explanation than nitty-gritty word for word. And I found that many of my students did not know the exact word for word translation of Gemara. So I spent a few weeks trying to... I tried for a few weeks to translate exactly word for word a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Adat Chafalef Eilu Metzias. And it did take me a very, very long time, even though I did teach Hebrew grammar for many years, and I'm fluent in Hebrew language, and I'm all into Aramaic. It took me, as well, not an expert, but an avid fan of the language, meant a lot of time to get the exact translation. When we speak about confidence, when we speak about giving a child success, it comes from knowing that you did a good job. Confidence comes from knowing that I did a good job. Sometimes we have a teacher whose goal is to give the children more of the idea of what's going on in the Chumash. I said before, Shlach Lecha Anashim Yesu Eretz Kanan. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to send messengers to spy out the land of Canaan. Pardon me. Part of the homework is going to be to translate, read and translate that phrase. Well, sometimes your child is really reckless. We'll be able to come down and translate the whole thing. And even if the translation is not 100%, that's really not going to bother the child, because the child's so reckless anyway. Or the child's very smart. And for that child to come and read it without knowing the exact translation, those get off his back. That's not a problem. That's for about 5% of the kids are very smart, and 5% of the kids are very reckless. 90% of the kids, I put my finger on their pulse, and I realize there's something lacking. The confidence isn't here. In which case, what I do is I slow down the pace. And I say, first, after we know how to read the words, let's work on the translating of every single word individually. Let's know what every single word means. So for Chumash, or for Gemara, what I do is, I have an example of the translation, but what I do is, I take a word, and I say, okay, let's say we're learning Shlach. Right above the word Shlach, write a little one. Then inside of Chumash, write a little one. And then write send. Okay. Great. Shlach, send. How do you know? It says right here. Great. Okay. Lecha. For yourself. Okay? Two, above the word lecha on the side. For yourself. Number three, anashin. Okay. What's anashin? Men. Okay, anashin. Men. That's a three on the side. Why is this important? Number one, it's important that the child knows the translation. But it's also important that the child is challenged. And when I write a word above the word in Hebrew, it may not be so much of a challenge because it's right there. It's not a challenge for them to remember the word. But if I write it on the side, I am challenging, but I'm not frustrated. I'm not frustrated because in case the child does not know the word, it's right there for him. And you know who wrote the word? The child themselves wrote the word on the side. So, of course I know what it is. It's right here on the side. And I'm not frustrated by the challenge that you gave me because not only did you give me the question, not only did you give me the problem, but you also gave me the skill to achieve. You gave me the skill to solve the problem. And that's very important as we talk about confidence. Okay, any questions about translation? No. One last point about translation, and this is something that we are going to speak about in section number 3, learning yourself first, is that exact translation is very, very difficult. And it's very, very time-consuming. And it's very, very nitty-gritty. And it will be very difficult for a parent without any skills in Lashon HaKodesh to come and start, okay, let's work on exact translation here. We're in the middle of learning Chumash. Let's work. It will be very difficult if the first time the parent sees the material that the child is learning will be during their learning session. We're going to speak about a little bit about the pre-learning for the pre-learning. Learn it yourself first, which is stage number 3. In addition, for those who can hack it, it would be nice if the parent could gain more skills in Lashon HaKodesh. There are many books today in a bookstore which give the basics of Lashon HaKodesh, be it prefixes, suffixes, be it shoresh, be it different tenses, be it different constructs. Little by little, to gain skills there. And certainly, it may be taught in the classroom, but if the parent comes and says, I learned it when I was younger, let me brush up on it. Let me, because I see it's important for my kids to know. Then it will start to trickle down. The knowledge of the parent will trickle down to the child. And it'll be able to hold the hand of the child and say, oh, lecha is to you, as opposed to you as a man, as opposed to lach, or anashim is plural, singular is ish. So this is anashim, this is men. Be able to start to differentiate a little bit. Give the child that skill. And that's very, very important that the child has the skill. It's also very important the child sees that the parents have the skill because this is a skill they're being taught in school. And if the parent says, well, you know, whatever it says. That's what it says. Why? Because it says so. So it's going to be very, very difficult for the child to pick up on the nuances and the importance of the nuance in language if the parent himself, herself, doesn't have that skill and doesn't feel it's important. Okay. The third skill is called explanation. And what do I mean by explanation? Say it in your own words that I could understand it. That's it. I don't want to know Rashi. I don't know Ramban. I don't know Medrash. I know Rionis and Ibishitz. I know Myron Cutler or the Vilna Gaon. I want to know what is going on here in your own words. Tell me the whole story from beginning to end. And I have a very important rule, which I should have made a sign, like in Brooklyn, they say, no U-turns. So I have a rule. I tell my students, no pronouns. What do I mean by no pronouns? He told him to send people to Eretz Yisrael, and he listened. Great. What am I supposed to do with that? How does that show me that you know what's going on? Oh, well, it's much easier for me to say he and him and they. I know it is. And that's why I don't want you to do it. I want you to think. And many times when I start giving this challenge to people, they start getting a little insecure. And they say, I don't really know. So, okay, well, let's think about it. Let's go a little bit slower. Again, the idea is that confidence leads to success. And success leads to confidence. I want to build confidence. I want to build that idea. Yes, I can. I can learn. And if it takes going a little bit slower and telling me the story in a little bit, in a little more simplified terms, and to simplify, if we can get it to the most simple meaning. Let me give you an example. We learned a Mishnah. It's on the bottom of the page. The Mishnah, first Mishnah again, says, Hamevi get m'mdinas hayam, one who brings a document of divorce from overseas, Sarach Shiyomar must say, b'fanei nechtav, who b'fanei nechtam, in front of me is written, and in front of me it was signed. Okay, pretty simple. The translation is right here, assuming that a child could pronounce it, assuming that a child could translate every single word. Then we work on explanation. And I say, What's going on here? So they say, well, he brings a get from overseas. You got to say, fanenechta, fanenechta. He brings the document of divorce. You got to say, what's going on? They say, give me names over here. I say, okay. Bob brings a get. You're talking about Bobby? Yeah, Bob. So Bob brings a get. So he has to say it was written and signed for me. I said, I don't want to know he. Just tell me exactly who was doing what. So Bob brings the document of divorce. Bob says that it was signed in front of me. Okay, great. Now, this is a rule brought down in the Mishnah. And it seems to me as the speaker here pretty obvious, although I'm not sure how much everyone here has learned previously. But it seems to be pretty simple. Now, I sat down with a child this past week. And the child was a little bit of very, very weak. And because I'm a learning specialist, there are other great Rebbeim, etc. And this year, he started to learn with me just this past week. And I explained this to him. First, we started the pronunciation, then the translation, and then we got to the explanation. And I explained it to him, and he really didn't understand. And we simplified it. I said, listen, Do you know what a get is? Sure. Do you know that someone may bring it from overseas? Well, how would that work? So, well, you know, sometimes a woman may be in Yerushalayim and the husband's in New York and he may want to divorce his wife without going there. So he may send a get with a messenger, just like you send a piece of mail. He'll send it with a messenger. Oh, okay. Now, when this lady gets this get, or they have base in there, they know that it's done right? Yeah, why not? Well, maybe the husband's going to say that it was forged. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. So when a man sends a document of divorce, just like any other check, we have to make sure that it was done properly. And we have to make sure that the one who brings it says that I vouch that it was done properly. So, oh, okay, I understand it. I said, do you understand 100%? He says, about 99%. I said, okay, let's go over it again. And I went over it again with him. About took another 5-10 minutes, this whole concept. And I said, Do you understand this? He says, yeah. I said, 100%? Yeah, 100%. I said, tell me something. Did you ever understand Gemara like this? He says, no, I never did. I said, really? Well, I thought to myself, this boy's in, say, 9th, 10th grade. And he never understood Gemara like this. And this wasn't Gemara, this was just the Mishnah. And I could only understand Chumash what it was for him. And 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. Until I came and I said, okay, let's learn this on your level. It's a very, very basic understanding. I'm not getting frustrated, I'm just here to teach you whatever you can in this amount of time. And that's what I mean by explanation. Basic. I will tell you basic information, and it could very well be, in terms of hints, I'm going to give you very, very, I'm just going to paint the whole thing for you and you're just going to spit it back to me. Could be that I'll leave some details out, depending on where the child is. And then, the child will give it back to me. And that's confidence. If a child can read the words, and the child can give me a translation, and the child can give me an explanation, he's a hotshot. He's a real hotshot. He knows what's going on. And in fact, I have a story. Well, I had a boy in 8th grade that I was teaching quite a few years ago. And I taught him this for a whole... He was getting a test again to 9th grade. And I taught him this method on a piece of Gemara. And this boy went through pretty much every single tutor and reading specialist. And I sat with him, and we knew every single word on the page, and every single pasuk where it came from, and every single basic explanation of the pasuk. Not about 15 lines of Gemara. Just basic explanation. Nothing fancy at all. And he knew where every pasuk came from, he knew the explanation of the pasuk, etc. And his Rebbe, he had some type of resource Rebbe when they got to this Gemara. And he asked him, okay, can you read the Gemara? He said, sure. So he read the Mishnah, he read the Gemara, and he read everything perfectly, stopping with perfect pauses, reading it slow. The Rebbe said, one second, who taught you how to learn Gemara this way? I never heard a kid read the Gemara this way. And he said, oh, Rabbi Pero taught me this way. And what I'm saying is, it's not like I'm not teaching everybody such great Kiddushim and Gemara and Chumash. All I'm teaching is the very, very basic explanation, the basic understanding, and it is in the basic explanation and the basic understanding that the depth of the Gemara and the depth of Chumash is found. And the person who wrote that in his letters is none other than Rav Shach. That Ezra Menachem and Shach wrote this in his letters about 30 years ago, and that people do not understand what it means to learn Gemara, what it means to learn Chumash. It means to understand the basic question and the basic answer. And he must have wrote this about 100 times in 100 different letters. And I read it. They have a 4-volume set of all his letters. And I read it many, many times in many, many different letters. The depth is acquired with review. When a child reviews, or a student reviews the Gemara, and he reviews the material, then the depth will develop. All too often, as we see in the first picture, we climb to the depth right away. We climb to the depth of the mountain. Oh, let's go to the top. Let's go to the depth. Whereas the pronunciation, translation, explanation is not there. And then it leads to a lot of frustration, which is one of the Haitians that I'm trying to avoid. Okay. Moving right along, we have something called evaluation, which is that the parent, although not a teacher, and may be very difficult for them to understand where a child is in regards to their peers. Where are the peers and where is my child? Is my child with their peers? Is my child not with their peers? Are they above class level? Are they below skill level? Trying to get a picture may be very, very difficult unless you're, as they say in the Gemara Rosh Berubah, unless you're entirely involved in the parsha of teaching. What a parent can do is say, I am the best at knowing what my child needs at this particular moment. I don't know what the class is up to, but I can tell you what my child needs, which leads me up to step number 3, which is learn it yourself first. If a parent comes to a pasuk, to a chumash, there are many, many difficulties in reading a chumash when the child's learning. Number one, it may be difficult because the child is ahead of the parent. Number two, the child sees if the parent took time out to learn it first, you say, wow, my parent is really fluent in this. My parent really knows this very well. It must be that it's something important to learn. That's creating a thirst for learning, seeing that, wow, this is important to my parent. My parent's a great role model. I want to be just like my tati or my mommy. That's great. Now, number three, I think, is even more important from the purest perspective, which is that any piece of Torah that we learn, any Chumash or Kitzel Shulchan Aruch, will inherently be problematic at a certain level. There will be a piece of material that I do not understand. I may not understand it because it just isn't something I know, or I may not understand the words, the concepts may be tough. What, as an intelligent, yeshiva educated, or Beis Yaakov, or whatever educated individual, I'm going to do, oh, I'm going to go ask my rabbi. So I'm going to go call my rabbi. My rabbi's on the phone and say, yo, I'm learning this Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. I'm learning this Chumash. I just don't understand why Moshe Rabbeinu was sending these Meraglim. Why is he sending them? Oh, he sent this Meraglim. You know, there was a big Inyan of sending them. Oh, okay. I'm going to sit with my kid and I'm going to say, now we're learning Shlach. Let me tell you a question that I just had last week when I was learning Shlach. You know, why do you think Moshe Rabbeinu sent these Meraglim? I said, oh, mommy, that's a good question. Oh, well, I called up our rabbi and I asked him. And this is the answer that he gave me. And what's the child going to see? Not only is he frustrated, is he or she going learning, but the parent's also learning. And not only is the parent learning, but the parent is sharing with me his or her challenges that he or she had in learning and how they indeed solved it and how learning is interesting for them. And that is the point of number one, which is that the Torah says, Vishinantam Levanach. You should teach your child. Who does the primarily give up Torah give obligation to teach their child? Who? The parent. Seems kind of funny. I think that I'm pretty good, pretty sharp guy, right? And I know a little about Kriya, I know about teaching Gemara, I know a little about Halacha. But I gotta tell you something. Although I may be pretty good, but I'll go to Torah Sora Convention in another few months, and there will be teachers there, I guarantee you, who are much better than me in teaching Kriya. And you know what? There will be better Moras who are better than me at teaching Tanakh. And there are Rebbeim out there who can wipe the floor with me in Gemara. And in Halacha, there are people that I cannot hold a candle to. In which case, we have a tremendous question on the Torah, which is, what was the intent of Hashem when he told us that you shall teach your children? You should teach your children? I would think, if I was writing the Torah, I'd write, well, sub it out, right? Farm it out. Find the best Melamed, and you should send them to the best for every single subject. Find the best teacher, which is something what we do in school. If they have a couple of Rebbes or Moras, we try to find the best one, who's going to be best for my... But overall, I'm speaking that the Torah's intent... What was the Torah's intent when it said that you should teach your child? I think, and once I said it, I heard that there's another famous rabbi who said that. He said the same thing. Is that a parent has a very, very special relationship with the child. In that the parent has a vested interest in seeing that the child succeed. A Rebbe may also, a Mora may also, but a parent has the most vested interest. How many times do I see parents come down and speak to administrators one-on-one, and the parent fights for the child and calls on the phone and says, I really, really want my child to succeed. And they're going to be fighting tooth and nail to see their child succeed. And that's Vishinantam Levanecha. And Vishinantam Levanecha means additionally that it's up to the parent to see if the evaluation, where exactly is my child and how at his stage in learning can I give it to my child? And that's my responsibility. And someone told me that Rabbi Noach Orlovich said the same thing. So I'm at least he is a wonderful mechanech and I am not alone in my thought. He likened it to a doctor who gives prescriptions, and a doctor, let's say, would give prescription to each patient individually. And a classroom setting, it very much is we're giving the same curriculum to everyone. Whereas if you would ask the doctor specifically, is this good for my child? The doctor may say, well, you should give him a little bit of a lower dose. You say, oh, really? Okay. And this one, I give him a little bit of a higher dose of that. So in fact, I say it's something similar to like a math class. Let's say you have a math class. And the math class learning 10 questions a day. And I go to the math teacher, and my son or my daughter isn't doing too well in the math class. I say, you know what? You should be teaching only 5 questions a day. He says, you know what? Your son, to maximize his learning, should really only be learning five questions a day. Great. So then I go to the... and then you have another parent comes in and says, you know, my daughter, she's doing well in the math class. She should be learning 15 questions a day. And the math teacher says, right, your child should really be learning 15 questions a day. That'd be the best. So the parents come to you and say, you know, he said that for me, it should be 5 questions. Or, I don't understand. You told this person 5 and this is person 15. What are you doing? Say, well, I'm teaching for the class. And for the class, generally speaking, 10 questions is the best for the class. Does that mean that individually it'll work? But the best thing for your child is what you as a parent could give your child. In which case, it's going to be a little bit tough when it comes to tests. And tests are a real tough, tough subject. Because teachers will test on the classroom model. Meaning that we have a math class, and we teach 10 questions a day. So for the child who can really do 15 questions, that's fine. They can take the question test. What about for the child who can only do 5 questions a day? What are they supposed to do on the test? Are they supposed to fail? Are they supposed to get a 50? What are they supposed to do? So we can come, we can say, with a pretty liberal idea of education, tests are bad. We shouldn't give any tests, right? We don't like tests. Everyone should get grades based on class participation, which has merits, but that's not reality. Because reality are that we don't all send to schools where they come and they say, oh, we get rid of tests. And I don't even know how good those schools are. They could be excellent. I'm just saying, I don't know. No tests. Other way is what they call, not differentiation. Modification. This is very, very important. Modification. Thank you. Is that when we talk about modification, a parent calls up the teacher. He says, listen, teacher. You know that my son has issue. I am working with my son to understand the first 2 psukim. And we work on it, and he knows it. He followed the pronunciation to the explanation. We can test him on those. Would it be possible to modify the test for my child? To say, right now, instead of testing him on the first 20 psukim with Rashi, Ramban, and Orach Chaim, could we test them on the first 2 psukim of the translation and basic explanation? Phrased like that, most teachers will say, okay, that makes sense. I will take off a lot of the questions on my test for your child. And that's not cheating. That's just working with where your child is. And with the knowledge that if you work with your child is, then your child will succeed. And if a parent chooses to ignore where their child is, the opposite's going to be true. And if we push, you should be there. Oh, let's learn together. Let's go. Say the Gemara. Well, he's not going to participate. And the results are going to be disastrous. Going on to number 3 in Learn It Yourself First. Make it a shared experience, not a test. We're going to speak about that in part number 4, how to learn it first, concepts. Daughter, we're learning Chumash, let's learn it together. Let's try to understand. Let's work it out. I'm not here to breathe over your shoulder. What are you doing in class today? You going to get that? Okay. I'm so upset with you. And that's not a good way to create a thirst for learning. It may be, there was a book written by Chaim Potok called The Problem of the Chosen, where the Rebbe used to have his son sit by Shalashuddas, and the Rebbe was called the Faher, the test. And he would speak and the father would never speak to the son besides for the test. And he would quote Gemara's, quote Mishnah's, quote this, and if the kid didn't get it, the father would make a little bit of mistake. And then in the end he'd say, son, what mistakes did I make? And then someone would have to tell the father mistakes. And if he wouldn't get it, the father would chew him out for it. And that's maybe a little bit of an exaggeration as to what goes on with the father-son learning dynamic. But it's not, unfortunately, it's not too exaggerated. And all too often, even with a tutor-child dynamic, not holding hand in hand. It's not Ve'elchu Shneim Yachdav. It's not going together. And it's not a shared experience. It's more of like a test, a fill in the blank, a mi amar lami. Doesn't really go so far. And the child naturally is always trying to show the tutor or the parent that really I'm learning, I'm doing great, but it's doomed to failure because it's a test. I'm trying to test the kid out. Okay, number four. And this and this is a little interesting. Focus on what you know and a little of what you don't know. Let's focus primarily when teaching on what a child knows. We said before, shlach lecha anashim, send for your sent people, the asur Eretz Kanan. Let them go, spy out Eretz Kanan. Right? So, focus on what we know. Focus on who's doing what and where they're going, and a little bit of what they don't know. See if that confuses the child. See if that takes them off the track. If it takes the kid off the track too much, okay, I've taught you too much. You're not at that level yet. I'm going to go down a little bit. I'm going to go to your level. I'm going to teach you. You know what they say, that even Moses came down from the mountain to teach the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. So if Moshe come down from teaching with Hashem and learning the Torah over there, certainly every parent who has the child's best interest involved can focus on what they know and a little of what we don't know. Okay, are there any questions on stage number three? Learn it yourself first. There's a lot of information here. Okay. Any chidushim, anything interesting? Okay, move right along. This is going to be stage number four, and how to learn it yourself. These are concepts. And tell you the truth, if everyone's really good, I'm going to let you leave class early a little bit, have a little extra recess. So, how to learn the first concept. So, first we're going to look on Chumash Rashi on the right-hand side of the chart. Number one, this is talking for parents. How should a parent learn something first? How should they approach a subject that they've never seen before or have seen in 20 years ago? So number one, understand the basic meaning of a pasuk. We spoke about before. Who said what? To whom? Where are they going? What are they doing? In your own words. Number two, understand the basic meaning of Rashi. We have a Chumash, we have a Rashi. What does it mean basically? Nothing more than the basic concept. And number three is something very interesting, which I do from time to time with my students. Look up all the sources, make it real. What do I mean? Is that Rashi many times will quote a source from a Gemara or from a Medrash, and conceptually, students are not really sure where Rashi is getting his information from. Is he really just explaining things on his own? Rashi says, etc., etc., etc. Just give you an example. The pasuk says, now in last week's parsha, that Vayisur Tzitzu Havanim Mikirba, and in Rivka's stomach, the children fought. So what does it mean, Vayisur Tzitzu? And they fought. Interesting word. Rashi tells us that the word Vayisur Tzitzu comes from the root word of the word ruts, run. Is that when they would pass by, when Rivka would pass by a shul, a Beis Knesses, Yaakov would run to leave. And when she would pass by a house of Avodah Zarah, then Esav would run to leave. Now, Rashi quotes a source. Well, the source is from the Yalkut Shimoni. So, if we go ahead and open the Yalkut Shimoni, which is a collection of Midrashim, the Midrashim are written around the time of the Gemara, we would see that, number one, there's a little bit more in that source than Rashi says. Rashi took it a little bit off. But number two, you introduce an important concept, is that the parish of Rashi is really built primarily on earlier sources. But the source he's quoting is a Gemara. The source, this is not the first time in the year 1200, wherever Rashi lived, that this idea came, that the word Vayisrotz to Abanim Rekuba came along. Really, it came from 800 years before, that Vayisrotz to really came from the word Ratz, really came from the word run. And when a child sees the evolution of learning that we open up a source, and the child will say, wow, well, Rashi didn't really say anything. It was just written here before. I say, exactly. Rashi modified the Medrash a little bit, but he brought the Medrash. And that would go for other learning as well. When we speak about Gemara, in Gemara, we have different psukim that are based in the Gemara. And when I tell parents when they learn Gemara with their children, the most important thing is to look up the pasuk and to say, okay, you know what? We have a Gemara, quotes a pasuk. Rashi may quote another pasuk in the course of Rashi. Say, okay, now I'm closing my Chumash Bamidbar. Now I'm opening my Chumash Devarim. And now my sole interest is understanding that psukim, those psukim that are over there. And this is the same idea. This is building confidence. This is not just Rashi referencing some other pasuk. This is Rashi referencing a parsha that I know myself. And this is a very, very important skill. Anyway, time's right about up right now. So I appreciate everybody for coming. And I'm giving another workshop, another 15 minutes, on how to maintain religious values in a godless society. It's going to be at 10:45. I appreciate everyone for coming. And anyone with any questions...